Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. Now, today we're going to do things a little bit differently. We're going to shake up the structure of our Big Three just so that we can have a bit more of a casual, revealing conversation coming out of the message. So part of the difference is my co-host. For the first time ever, we have Jessica Baker. Jessica, welcome to the Big Three.
Thank you, Matt. Well, it's so good to be here. I'm so stoked.
Isn't it just delightful?
It is delightful.
Now, you know, for some of our listeners who have no idea who you are or why you're here, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm Jess. My last name's Baker. I've been a part of GBC for about 6 years now.
I'm a veteran.
I am a veteran. Time to move on. No, it's definitely not. I love this place.
You cannot leave us.
I'm a youth leader here at the church, and I'm also a midwife. And I've just come off night shift.
Yep.
So if I start to not make sense, I become a bit incoherent.
Slow your
fall
words.
Fall asleep even. They're all possibilities. I apologize for all of them.
You're functioning off 4 hours sleep. Is that correct?
I had a little nap this morning at 8 a.m. Well, so that's all you need.
Such a commitment to the cause. Yeah. Such love for the ministry.
Gotta say love Jesus.
Love Jesus.
Love Jesus.
Great.
That's why I'm here.
Awesome. Well, it's great to have you.
Thanks.
Well, this week, Mark Coleman spoke to us about encouragement as part of our series in the book of Hebrews titled Anchor. Now, you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermons podcast. But Jess, I'm keen to hear your reflections. Now, I guess we both benefited from church online this week because neither of us logged in on Sunday. You were away,
guys.
Different places.
Yeah.
But we went on YouTube today and we watched the sermon. What stood out for you?
Technology today.
Oh, the tech.
I thought it was a banger. Well done, Mark Coleman. I don't know whether I'm just completely naive or it's so ingrained in my culture that I didn't quite notice or didn't appreciate the fact that we just slam our leaders. I thought it was really cool how Mark kind of pointed out that, you know, we don't necessarily encourage our leaders. And in fact, we kind of do the opposite to make sure that they, you know, get back down to their level. But I thought, you know, that was a bit of a challenge to kind of encourage.
Yeah, that tall poppy syndrome, just like.
Yeah, yep.
It's a real thing.
Sorry, guys. Sorry, leaders in the world.
We love you.
Or do we?
I guess that's what we'll figure out today. I've got to admit, like, first of all, I've got to confess, I got about halfway through the message and then realized I was looking at the wrong Bible verse. Not that I was looking at the wrong Bible verse. So the thing that stood out to me was make sure you got the Bible verse right.
Yes.
But like I was only looking at the tail end of chapter 13, but obviously Mark's message was about all of chapter 13.
Yeah.
So that stood out to me a little bit.
Yeah.
I've got to admit, I also, something that really stood out for me was the whole, like, I think when we talk about, are you receiving encouragement? We all kind of, you know, wave that banner because we're like, yeah, like people need to encourage us. Like, I want to feel encouraged. Mm. But then that whole, are you giving it? I was like, ooh, that's a revealing question. And I think sometimes, I guess something that stood out for me was that I think we can compartmentalize those kinds of spiritual practices and we kind of go, oh, you know, that's not my gifting or that's not the way I do things.
Yeah.
I instantly thought about love languages and how one of them is words of affirmation. And so if words of affirmation isn't your love language, then you're kind of given a free pass to not say nice things to people. You're like, that's just not how I say love. And it's like, okay, yeah, I get that. But actually what Coleman was talking about was, no, this is something for all of us to be doing. And we don't just take, but we've got to make sure that we're all giving as well.
For sure.
What was your take home?
I thought it was great that it's actually a part of our kind of Christian walk to surround ourselves with people who encourage us. I know, like, it's not something I actively look for, but when I get it, I'm so hungry for it, and it's so important, and it's such a huge part of being a Christian is to kind of band together and spur each other on. But also what you were saying about that it is about you encouraging others and that's your role as a Christian.
Yeah, absolutely. That whole, I think the way Coleman said it was that surrounding yourself with people is vital to the faith. And I'm like, I mean, like we're however many months into a global pandemic, we were just talking just before we started about like potential lockdown happening again.
Heavy days.
Oh, I rebuke it in the name of Jesus, I say. But, you know, and I think we're all so people starved and connection starved.
Oh,
that, like, it just stood out to me like, yes, that makes complete sense. Mm. Of course, being surrounded by people is vital. But, you know, I think when we're in the usual rat race, when there isn't a global pandemic causing us to like scurry into our homes, and we're not being forced to disconnect, I think we can sometimes naturally not prioritize surrounding ourselves with people in a way of like intentionally to kind of be building up not only ourselves and our faith, but to be building others up as well.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I find that really awkward. I'm an easy breezy gal. So to sit down and be like, you're doing this so well, it's just something really awkward for me, and I avoid it at all costs, but I'm not going to.
Not today. Awesome. Well, today, as always, we're going to be unpacking three big questions submitted through Slido during our Sunday services. So Jess, what are our big three questions today?
We've got a good three questions lined up. Number one, what is hospitality? And number two, how do we support our leaders? Mm-hmm. Number three, how has encouragement made an impact on your life?
Right on. Okay, so big three questions. What's the one that you're most keen to kind of get at?
I am pretty excited about the hospitality question. I am a dinner party fiend and I've grown up with my mum really showing amazing hospitality, and I want to kind of go deeper into that and see how I can do it in my life.
Is it more than just a well-positioned cheese platter?
Look, I think that's a huge part of it.
Yep.
Like, if you can't cheese platter, what are you even doing?
Yeah, do you know Jesus?
Yeah. Theologically sound.
Well, actually, so that we can bring some appropriate theology into this conversation, I think it's time that we bring in our third member of the Big Three. Now, Mark Coleman, who brought us the message on Sunday, unfortunately couldn't be here for the Big Three. He and his beautiful family have taken a couple of weeks for a well-deserved holiday. So we brought in senior pastor Mark Rader, the esteemed Mark Rader. Bless
old
him.
Old mate Ray Dogs.
Old mate Ray Dogs.
One of those things is not like the other. That's
right. But they're both equally profound. Radar, thanks so much for being here for the Big Three. It's great to have you.
Yeah,
great to open up an opportunity to bring in your wisdom and your sound theology, as we've said.
That's what we're all here for.
That's what we're all here for. So
if I can kind of step up from the theology of good cheese platters, I think we'll be fine. Right?
I mean, the bar is high.
Hard to top.
Yeah. I mean, nothing beats a cracker with a little bit of blue cheese and some quince.
Quince.
Am I right?
Yes.
Now, Rader, one of the things that Coleman spoke about on Sunday was holiness. It's something that we've mentioned a couple of times throughout the series of Hebrews, and hospitality. I think it was sexual purity, and then, not being a slave to money were the three things that Coleman spoke about around what it looks like to be holy or have holiness, I guess. And so our first question is to unpack one of those things, hospitality. What is hospitality more than a cheese platter, I'm assuming?
I would agree that you can't go wrong with a good cheese platter.
Thank you. That's all we needed. And now we can wrap up the Big Three. Thanks for joining us today.
That's right. I think that hospitality is, it's kind of a little bit like generosity, I think, to some degree, that we do tend to define it quite narrowly. Hmm. I think that one of the most helpful things to be aware of is how hospitality would have been understood in the first century, where hospitality was not just having your friends around. It was actually about opening your home to people who were traveling. Like, there were no real motels or hotels of good repute, and so people often relied on being able to stay with, well, people that they knew perhaps only a little bit. So people would sometimes travel with letters of recommendation. So, you know, if...
reference?
Yeah, to some degree. So if I were traveling to your town and Jess knew myself and knew you, she would write a letter on my behalf to you that I would give to you when I arrived, saying, hey, Matt, this is Jess. This is Mark. I know you don't know him from a hole in the ground. He's a good guy. He's on his way to wherever he's going. Could he stay with you and your family for a while? And so you'd open your home to people that you didn't know particularly well. And that's kind of part of what the author kind of points at when he says that, you know, by people have entertained angels unaware.
Yeah.
Right? Like this whole idea that it's people that they don't know, right? If it's only my friends, well, then I'm not going to entertain any angels because I know them all.
Yeah.
Right? Like these are people I know. I've known them all my life. If they're angels, they've been hiding out for a long time, right? And so I think for us, I think while there's certainly benefit in opening our homes to friends, I think the challenge of Christian hospitality is how do we open our homes to others? to people that we don't know very well. And that's where we get awfully nervous.
Yeah.
You know, we like having people in our homes who we know and are known quantities, and they're honest and they're going to be respectful and reciprocate and all of those sorts of things. Mm. But that's not what necessarily Christian hospitality is called to, which means that it opens it up to a whole raft of things. I think it fits quite nicely with generosity in that sense, being generous in spirit with all that we have, you know, and bringing people into our homes. You think about, you know, hospitality, and I'm not sure whether the root word of that is hospital in the same, like in the sense that I would assume it would, because they yep. sound the same, but that whole idea of really providing a place where people can rest and recuperate and whatnot, I think is a really significant part of hospitality. And I think if we limit it to just having dinner with our friends, then we do what Jesus accused the Pharisees of just kind of, you know, being nice to those who are nice to us.
Yeah. But if I can jump in there, because like, totally appreciate that that's how, you know, the first century functioned, mm-hmm. but we live in a very different world. Mm-hmm. Trust is, mm-hmm. you know, in high demand these days. And like, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm sorry, if you show up to my house with a letter from someone that I knew in high school, I'm closing my door. So what then is a modern depiction of Christian hospitality that we can kind of take hold of that's more than just, I'll invite my friends around?
Yeah, I think that's the challenge in part, right? You know, I don't think that many of us would be comfortable kind of going out into the streets and finding someone and saying, "Hey, come around to my house for lunch." Mm. You know, got a great cheese platter. You know, you'll love it.
which would be true.
but I do think we have to. I think the space where we can move into is a little bit about people that we don't know as well, about opening our doors more widely. Yeah, because sometimes hospitality is about us, right? And it's about bringing people into our home and having a great time and entertaining them really well and all that sort of stuff, rather than about the people that we're inviting over. Are we inviting people who really need friends, who need a place where they can kind of call home for a period of time? I think that's part of it. And I think we probably need to challenge our kind of our boundaries on some of that stuff. I mean, we don't want to be unsafe and, you know, all of those sorts of things. Mm. But I think that we, you know, it's kind of like generosity, where we talk about generosity not in terms of proportion, but in terms of scale. So if someone gives a great big donation, but they've got lots and lots of money, that's seen as particularly generous, whereas a small gift that's a higher proportion of someone's overall income is perhaps the more generous act.
Yep.
So I think we just need to be careful about, you know, not defining hospitality too thinly, and to include all sorts of ways that we just help people feel at home, and part of what it is that we're doing, and that has wider implications for all of our relationships. Mm. You know, how we invite people into our space out in our workplaces.
Yeah.
You know, how we invite people into our spaces, I think, becomes a really significant piece.
Because it seems to me, based on what you're saying, hospitality then, like, we need to redefine it in our mind to go beyond the scope of a meal. Because, like, I even think about here at Gaimi, like, when we're allowed to have church one day.
Yeah.
And, you know, the hospitality ministry are the people who make coffee and who put on the delightful cookies for us. And
the hospitality industry is
So it's all about, but it seems the way that you're speaking about and kind of defining hospitality is it's less meal orientated and more, I'm going to welcome you into my inner circle of.
Yeah, I think so. And that would often include meals, right? You know, so I wouldn't want to say that it's not about food. I think one of the great ways that we welcome people in is when we welcome them to our dinner table. You know, that there's something quite remarkable about that. But I do think a wider definition of hospitality is a helpful thing.
So then just to go one step deeper, because something that Coleman spoke about on Sunday is that this whole idea of being distinctly different. And, you know, he spoke about those three things: hospitality, sexual purity, and not being a slave to money. And he said, you know, when it comes to sexual purity and not being a slave to money, we do have quite different views to the world. But when it comes to hospitality, that's something that even non-believers can really kind of go, yeah, like, we value that. And we want to be a part of that. So how is Christian hospitality then different to just a worldly sense of hospitality? Because I think what you're saying is, like, I think anyone would kind of say, yeah, we want to be people who are you know, opening up ourselves to those who might need additional support.
Yeah. Those are good questions. And I have to admit that hospitality is an area that I've wanted to kind of read in a little bit because it's, I think there's a whole lot more in it. And I think what Mark said was right, that there's an openness, even, you know, like it's something that makes sense in our wider culture.
Yeah.
In a way that, say, generosity might not, although it does a little bit, and sexual fidelity perhaps might not in the kind of the wider culture. So I think there's some really interesting stuff in it. So I don't know exactly what that would look like, but I think there's something about rearranging the boundaries of who's in and who's out and being a little bit more open in that space. And I know, like, we struggle with that, like, you know, whether it's because of time or we just like our, you know, we like being our family or, you know, things are busy enough or whatever it is. We make all sorts of excuses to have pretty firm boundaries around our homes. And I think that, I think a big challenge for us would be just, you know, having our being more hospitable with our neighbors, welcoming them in, not necessarily into our home, but just being more welcoming in that space. I think there's lots of that kind of space. Mm. And it's a hospitality that's driven somehow by the kingdom, right? Mm. So the idea that, you know, I want to serve those around me. I want to be an example of Jesus. You know, although Jesus seemed to be the one who received hospitality more than gave hospitality, you know, he was often, he sometimes seemed to be the host, even though it wasn't at his house. you know, you just kind of go, geez, that's hospitality. You know, Jesus had a party at my home, you know, and you're inviting them, you know. So I think that there's some space in there for us to think that through more. Mm. Yeah.
Right on. All right, well, let's move on to question two.
So I know it kind of goes without saying that we are completely surrounded by leaders all the time, whether it's in our church, we've got so many leaders here, senior pastors, the leadership team, all that kind of stuff, but in our workplace, in school, wherever it is. And I feel like they pave the way. They go through all the hard stuff first and they kind of lead us through that. And they definitely deserve to be valued and supported. So, Mark, how do we support our leaders? if we do at all.
If you do at all. And it's a really interesting challenge, I think, in an Australian context. You know, I've been here long enough that, you know, I think I appreciate, you know, the tall poppy syndrome. I think
you've become
appreciate
one of us.
Yeah, we're savage.
Well, I appreciate the cultural significance of that. And so, you know, thinking about the question, I thought, you know, the first thing that jumps to my mind, of course, is just do what we ask. <You know? laughs> But I thought that's actually not a very good answer at all. And it's not actually all that encouraging. We're working through, you know, our plans as a church and the church leadership team. We've been engaging in some, I wouldn't say it's robust in a conflicted sort of way, but there's some robust questions being asked, and I actually find that really encouraging. Mm. And I think that, you know, out of that, I think for me, if it all came down to one thing, the one thing you can do to encourage leaders is get involved in leadership. Mm. Stand alongside them. The people that I value, the people whose opinions I value the most are the people who have said, I'll stand with you in this space. Mm. I'll lead in this space. And then you can share vision and you can talk about and you can negotiate what vision looks like and what you're going to be engaged in. And so people who step into leadership, particularly those who step into leadership when they say, I'm not a leader. Oh, I just find that so encouraging, you know, because, and it's often how I feel, you know.
So, neither am I.
So it's just really good to have people who go, yeah, I'm in. I'm actually going to put some skin in the game and I'm going to try to lead. I think that's perhaps the most significant thing we can do to encourage leaders. Calling people out for stuff they do that's good, that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, asking questions rather than immediately assuming that this is a screw up or an oversight or whatever. Okay, that's nice. But ultimately, I think what it boils down to is people going, I'm in. I'm going to stand with you in this space, and I might not agree with everything you have to say, but we're going to engage in it. And I think that's, I thought hands down, that would be the thing for me that I would want most. People who I know, we're in. We're going to lead with you, even though we don't have all the answers and we don't know exactly where we're going and all that kind of stuff. I think that's critical.
I feel like Mark's probably got thicker skin than me, because where he goes, you know, tell me that I've done a good job, that's fine. I'm like, no, that's essential. Like, please tell me I've done a good job.
And I think you're doing such a good job, Matt. Oh,
thanks, Jess. I'll take it.
That's fully sincere.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll take, you'll take it anyway.
Like, just I'm the stage 5 clinger for the encouragement, for sure. But like something that Coleman said, which I've got to admit, like as I was watching the sermon, I let out one of those like, oh, yes, like those, like those little moments of amen, like it's good, break away, was when he used the illustration of leaders being kind of like the tip, the front of like the icebreakers. And I'm like, man, like they cop a beating, those things, like breaking through ice. And I guess his encouragement, or his challenge for us, was to understand that any struggle that we go through as a church, as a community, that the leaders have kind of paved the way, that they've gone through those struggles first and kind of cop the brunt of it. And I found that really affirming. I was like, yeah, like I think that's, you know, for myself in my own leadership, like I know that, you know, sometimes there are processes to what has had to happen, work that's gone into it, preparations that have been made that is kind of behind the scenes. And so people kind of see what they see, the delightful cheese platter, so to speak, if I can push the analogy, but they don't see all the like broken crackers and that. No, I'm going too far, aren't I? I just wanted that to work. But do you know what I mean? Like, and Jess is with me on this. I think that there's, because Coleman's thing was, you know, have confidence in that and encourage them in that space as well. I think that's really powerful, is kind of understanding that there's probably a lot that our leaders deal with and know and have worked through, and then they kind of bring forward a much more simple, approachable, easy access kind of process. And we need one, like, I think sometimes that is helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I think,
again,
that's,
I think you've I think got that, thicker skin. So.
I think that's leadership, though. Like that's true in the church and outside of the church, and you know, it is contingent upon leaders to communicate clearly. And I know that you know, sometimes you don't communicate the steps that you've gone, that you haven't shown them the back end, or you haven't revealed kind of what you've been thinking through or the why of something. And those are just lessons that you have to learn. I find, you know, I've talked about this before, but the principle of being a non-anxious presence, really, really helpful.
You seem to say that to me a lot, actually. I'm trying not to read into it too much.
You know, and to try to respond to things without reacting to stuff, because that just kind of makes it.
No, you're really good at
harder.
That, very deadpan.
And I think that,
what
you know.
What's he thinking?
That's poker face. And I think there's a fine line. You know, Mark talked about, you know, being all for the transparency of leadership, and I'm as well. I think that's really important. And so how, and I'd much rather, as I said, I'd much rather have people engaged in the process and asking tricky questions and pushing back on stuff than people who are like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Because there's a fine line between being passive and having confidence in a leader. Right? People who don't engage don't necessarily have any confidence in you. They're just not engaged in the process. And so there comes a time when it's like, listen, we need to stop the conversation. This is what I think God's saying to us. This is where I think, you know, in a say a corporate or business setting, this is where I think the organization needs to go, and we're done discussing. That's a leadership decision. But I think that line of confidence versus engagement, I think, is a really tricky one for people to hold. I know, like, I've often found that hard as well, just trying to work that out in terms of being led by others and what does that look like, and how do I do that in an engaged way while still having confidence when I disagree with some of the decisions or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky space.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a follow-up question, if I may. So, like, obviously for you, you're like, you know, one of the best ways that you can support a leader is by leading with them. What happens if, because we do have a culture where we rip it into each other, and, you know, Raider and I have a beautiful love language of just I'm trying to think of a...
Well, I'm trying to be honest with you.
Yeah. So. And I've tried to describe it, but you just got a first-hand experience of it. Beautiful. No, I'm fine. I'll just pick myself up.
You're doing
grad.
So well,
thank
man.
You. Thank you, Jess. I needed that. You know, we do have this culture in Australia where we like to rip into one another, particularly our leaders. I definitely think our relationship holds some of those characteristics.
It's culturally appropriate.
It's a beautiful thing.
Which is great.
You know, I don't cry in the corner by myself. No, that's fine. But, you know, I wonder if the way that we support leaders is to lead with them, as you've said, what happens for the person who the barrier in terms of becoming a leader is, well, I don't want to become a leader because then I'm just putting myself in front of the firing squad, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, there's an excellent book called The Leadership Paradox. I can't remember the author's names off the top of my head, but it's written out of an Australian context, not a Christian book, but talks about some of these very issues, about the nature of Australian leadership and the paradoxes within it and the opportunities that Australian leadership then has. If you're interested in leadership, particularly in an Australian context, I'd really recommend it. That's quite good. But I think that there is something really profound about that because we're very sarcastic as a culture. We're very sarcastic.
No. I haven't noticed. Yeah,
very few people do. I've only heard people say it. which means, of course, that we're not very good at stating what we mean, right? We're always kind of saying things offhandedly, which means then that you're always kind of on the defensive, right? And that's a really hard place to receive encouragement. I think you mentioned it earlier, Jess, that just it's weird it's if people are like, "Hey, yeah. you're doing great." You're like, and I think part of it is that we're so used to indirect speech that when someone says, "Hey, Jess, really appreciate what you're doing with youth, you know, and the investment you're making in my daughter's lives," there's a sense of like,
what does he mean by that?
Yeah,
I get that all the time. People are like, hang on, are you being serious? I can't tell. Yeah. You're always sarcastic. Yeah. No, I'm genuine.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You were doing a good job, man. Yeah.
That's right.
I don't believe you.
But then, so we're always on the defensive, and so it makes accepting encouragement quite hard. I remember very early in the piece when I was... We'd only been here a couple of years. It was in lead up to the 2000 games in Sydney, and that we hosted a number of teams of American, or kind of missionaries, I suppose, but out here to do some work evangelistically and whatnot with in the lead up. And a couple of them really struggled with the indirect language because they just couldn't tell if people were being serious. They got called out. They got caught out thinking that someone was being sincere when they weren't. And then you know how it goes. Oh, hey, I like your haircut. And you're like, oh, thanks. And you're like, I really like it. And I'm like, no, I don't. Like, I don't like it at all.
It's horrendous.
And then, you're like, well, why'd you say you like it? And I'm like, why don't you have a sense of humor? And right and off you kind of go. Because that's the worst thing.
And that's crying in the corner.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the worst thing that you can have in Australia, not have a sense of humor, right?
Yeah.
Right, because you got to just kind of tough it out and take it. But they were like, they got caught out by that, thanking someone for a compliment that was actually a backhanded compliment, and then getting laughed at because of it. And they just couldn't figure out how Christians, because this was in the church context, how Christians thought that kind of sarcasm and cruelty was actually okay. And I have to say,
Australia.
Thinking back on it, it's like, yeah, you're right. Like, not even thinking back on it. Like, at the time, I was like, yeah, welcome to Australia. but, I think we need to really work out in the church how we deal with that. Like, I think to some degree, it's not, if we wanted to delve a little bit deeper under, Mark's encouragement to encourage leaders, we actually have to figure out what's the role of sarcasm in the Christian church and the community of faith, and should it have as high a prominence as it does?
Ooh, that could be another big three.
Yeah, I need to go away and restructure my whole personality, after this.
Yeah, but who am I without my wit?
That's where the gospel actually engages with our culture.
Yeah.
Right? That's where we would start being really distinct if we stopped being quite so sarcastic, if we stopped being so indirect in our language, if we actually said what we meant and we did that most of the time, Christians would stand out in Australia real fast.
Whoa.
Mic drop.
All right.
All right, that's the end of the big three.
Let's just move on to question three, I think.
That was uncomfortable. Sorry.
All right, so let's wrap up with our third and final question. And I'm actually keen for us maybe all to share this, but I'll start with you, Mark. How has encouragement made an impact on your life? Because, I mean, we can talk about it hypothetically, we can talk about it biblically, but let's talk about it practically from personal experience. How has it impacted you?
I mean, there's two edges to that for me. The one is kind of how it's impacted me, which is the question.
Yes.
And I suppose the other one is kind of how have I been encouraged, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
and they're quite different. But I think that, you know, the simple answer to how has encouragement impacted me is I wouldn't be where I am without encouragement. There's no way that I would have stepped into the senior leadership role without the encouragement of people around me. There's no way that I would have continued and would continue to continue without the encouragement of those around me and the encouragement of, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Right? Yeah.
So, like, encouragement has shaped my journey in really profound ways, really profound ways that are probably too myriad to kind of point to. But now, there are a few places where I like that encouragement at that time was particularly meaningful because, you know, it gave me the confidence or the courage to take the step of faith or whatever it was. So I think that's the simple answer. I think that the nature of that encouragement has been people seeing potential in me before I would have seen it in myself, you know, and calling that out of me, giving me opportunities. You know, like I look back at some of the opportunities that I've been given, I think to myself, what in the world were you thinking?
Yeah, like me leading the Big Three podcast.
And what did you see?
You
know, and, you know, well, that's what we end up thinking, right? And yet so often people can see in us things that we can't see. We're just too close to it. And we see our flaws and our, like, just, it's like there's no possible way. And then, I think the encouragement of other leaders who have basically, you know, encouraged me by saying, yeah, that's tough. Just empathy, you know? And there's something quite profound about being told that what you're going through is normal. Just normalizing what's difficult, you know, to have someone who's a little bit further down the road say, yep, that's to be expected. You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, this is going to suck for you.
Like, it's like, you know, when we first became parents, you know, you go from being a competent adult.
I mean, was I? I don't know. Maybe more so than
least,
I am
at
now.
At least you've kind of got, you can pull it off. And you bring this little life home and you're like, I have no idea what I'm doing. The first time you talk to other parents who go, I have no idea what I'm doing. And you're like, you don't have any idea what you're doing. Neither do I. There's such a huge burden lifted off your shoulders. Now, it's still hard. You still don't really have any idea what you're doing, but at least you know it's normal. So I think, you know, that seeing the potential in me and calling it out and giving me opportunities, huge encouragement. And then, you know, people who have just normalized my experience has been incredibly encouraging. And then I think the third is, you know, people leading with me.
Yeah.
You know, believing in me enough to go, I'm going to stand alongside you. We're going to lead and I'm going to lead into this situation with you.
Yeah.
Let's go. You know, I think those are really significant forms of encouragement that have shaped who I am and where I find myself.
Yeah. Awesome. Jess, how about you?
I mean, I can pinpoint like little things even in the last couple of weeks that have made like a huge impact on me and my leadership as a youth leader and even as a midwife. I think encouragement is empowerment, and I don't think I would have tried any opportunities really unless someone had been like, no, you can do that, you can handle that. I think my default is to put myself down and see my flaws and see why I couldn't do something. And for, someone stepping outside of that situation and stepping back and saying, no, I've seen some qualities in you that mean you can do this is, you know, is vital to my survival. Does that make me needy?
Just keep it coming, please.
Just a little bit. But, just like little words here and there, and especially in, you know, youth leadership is hard and there's weeks where you think, wow, I did not make any impact on anyone tonight and I've just been a bit useless. But a little word from like a co-leader or something to say that, like, I saw this and or some, you know, a kid said this about you and that's really encouraging. It's great.
And that, I think that reflects, I think, our cultural struggle with leadership in Australia because, you know, for a variety of reasons, it's that tall poppy syndrome. I don't want to put myself up.
for someone else to bring you down.
Yeah, so we're kind of preemptive, right?
Yeah.
So like, I'm not going to let you point out my flaws.
Right? Let me tell you what they are.
I'll point them out first.
Yeah.
I'm going to rip into myself more than you could possibly rip into me, and I'm just going to protect myself.
Oh, gosh,
with that.
This is way too
I'm moving.
Real.
I'm moving. Is it Canada? Is it different there?
They're really nice in Canada, I think.
Well, we apologize after we tear you down, I think.
I think I make
idea,
no friends, though, in Canada, because I'm just like, you suck.
But I think then that creates a problem for us of saying, you know, I'll step into leadership.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, am I putting myself out there? Am I setting myself up to get hurt in that space? And so I think that it's a protective instinct that keeps us from stepping into leadership.
Yeah.
That's sad though, because then all our leadership is just that little bit stunted, isn't it? Like what Mark was saying about Hillsong, and that they've got this huge culture around supporting the leaders and it kind of liberates them to do some amazing things. Sorry, guys, you're just like, you're capped.
No, but I think that's actually, I can't remember the full details of that book I mentioned, but they talk about some of those very dynamics and just the freedom that comes when people are like, we are with you.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to follow you. Go. You lead.
Just, yeah.
And, oh, man.
What was it? Come on.
Yeah, come on.
Come on.
Come on. That's it.
Break away.
Like yourself.
No, I think there's such, the consistent thread, I think, between what you're both saying is that we need, like, there needs to be affirmation. I think everyone kind of craves and requires that affirmation in order to take that step into the unknown, out of their comfort zone, and take up a position of leadership. But not even, I mean, like, I think it's just, it goes beyond leadership as well, though, doesn't it? Like, we can encourage people to, you know, in a number of different avenues of life. But we do, we exist in this culture where we do kind of, we maybe assume the worst, or we tell ourselves the worst because we think that that's what everyone else is going to say. And we need someone to step out of that and kind of go, no, I see you, you matter. I want to affirm where you're going. I want to affirm where you're heading. And I actually think that what that opens up, and I know this has been my experience, is it opens up then vulnerability, because I think something that can sometimes be a barrier, whether it be leadership or whatever really, is the fear of failure. But if someone has kind of come alongside you and encouraged you, it has created this space of vulnerability where I can kind of go, listen, I still am working on this. I'm still figuring this out. I'm going to stumble. I'm going to fall. But to still have someone there kind of being your champion and your advocate and going, yeah, like, absolutely you will. But I'm still here with you. And I still think what I said, you know, last month, last year, is still true. And let's keep doing this. Let's keep working towards it. I think it's actually really powerful. Awesome stuff. Well, that's our big three. Rita, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
You delivered on the sound theology, so we appreciate it. Thanks so much for raising the bar. So just great stuff in that. I'm keen, just before we wrap up the big three today, to hear your reflections. Like, what stood out for you in amongst all that was discussed?
I feel like I feel guilty now of how much I'm kind of like, just put my leaders down, and I really want to be that cheerleader who stands alongside them and is like, you are doing so good, but not in a sarcastic way.
Man, absolutely. Same for me. Like, that sarcasm piece, I think I didn't fully realize how ingrained that is in, not just in my humor, but in the way I interact with people. And even when I want to give a genuine encouragement, it is kind of dripping with sarcasm, which is,
because I can't do it genuinely.
But like, it's just like, it's to the detriment of our own leadership and our own growth, and then to the detriment of those around us. Like, and even, I was even thinking to the point where now when I hear someone genuinely, and I guess this is what Rita was talking about, but when I hear someone genuinely encourage, I almost roll my eyes. Like, it feels insincere. It doesn't, like, you're full of it. Like, what are you actually trying to say to me? Yeah. You're clearly taking a dig.
And this is terrible.
What a way to live. This is not the way we were made. Yeah. Like,
and I love that can set us apart as Christians in our culture, which I'd never thought of before. I've really been like struggling to find, okay, how do we look different? Because there's some people who aren't Christians that are a better Christian than me.
Oh, amen.
And so this is actually like a really tangible, practical way that we could be a bit different.
Yeah. And I think particularly like when I think about, like, I think about our political leaders, and man, like, we love to just...
Paul ScoMo.
Like, we love to just rip him to shreds. And, you know, I've been a culprit of that, I guess. Like, you know, and we kind of wrap that up in democracy. Like, this is what it means to have free speech and yada, yada, yada. But, like, actually, like, how do I, yes, keep my leaders accountable? Because that's still biblical. That's still good. But in a way that still encourages, in a way that still builds them up.
Yeah.
That isn't just sledging them for sledge's sake because I want the likes on Facebook.
Yeah. I mean, there's some definite leaders in today's world that deserve a little sledging.
Ooh.
Can name a few. Will not.
Will not. Have we learnt nothing from today?
Obviously not.
Obviously. We're still working on it. We're still learning. We're still growing. This is a process.
Always.
This is a journey.
Yeah. But no, it's really encouraging and... A little bit.
Yeah. There needs to be a bit of I need some time for personal reflection.
Big time.
Personal growth.
Big time.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for being here. Thanks so much for having you here. Thank me for having you.
I'm so
here.
Great to have you.
You're
here,
welcome. Thank you
for letting me sit next to you.
You are most welcome.
Damn it, the sarcasm's still there.
It's still there. We can't escape it. It's a journey. Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you join us for our services online this Sunday at gbconline.org.au and that you snap the Slido QR code before the sermon to get involved. Just a reminder for those of you who are listening to the podcast today, we film The Big Three and it goes to air each Wednesday night at 7 p.m. at GBC Online. If you've enjoyed The Big Three podcast today, be sure to give us a star rating and subscribe so that you can stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.